This program was first broadcast on Otago Access Radio and made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
Sustainable Lens, Resilience on Radio. Hear an informed, intelligent and provocative discussion of issues every week as seen through the lens of sustainability. It is brought to you by Otago Polytechnic, where all students learn how to make their industries more sustainable. It is hosted by Samuel Mann and Shane Gallagher, and joined every week by a leading figure in the sustainability scene. Sustainable Lens, Resilience on Radio, broadcast every week on Otago Access Radio and podcast on sustainablelens.org and on oar.org.nz.
Welcome to Sustainable Lens, Resilience on Radio, a weekly show on sustainability topics brought to you by Otago Polytechnic. The show is co-hosted by Samuel Mann and Shane Gallagher. Shane's not here tonight, so it's just me, but I'm with Jesper Schellerus, who is the founder of Impact Hub Stockholm. He's been in New Zealand keynoting at the ITPNZ Symposium on Transformations.
Innovation that transforms society.
That sounds like it. That sounds like you read it. Welcome.
Thank you.
So you're the founder of Impact Hub Stockholm. What does that mean?
It means a lot of work. It means a history of a great history of meeting a lot of great people along the way, but also challenging roller coaster really, and it's been an entrepreneurial journey from the very start.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Stockholm, just north of Stockholm.
What did you want to be when you grew up?
I don't know. I can't remember. Probably many things. My father is a photographer and my mother is a journalist, so we travel with them a lot. I think maybe a chef. Cooking. I like cooking. I know, but I became an entrepreneur instead.
How do you go about becoming an entrepreneur? Is that a box to tick when you're 13? I don't remember seeing that one.
Well, I don't know. I just doing stuff, I think, pursuing all sorts of different projects. Everything from, building your own treehouse to, going on hikes, with friends. I'm a passionate sailor as well. I grew up on a sailing boat in the Stockholm archipelago. I don't know when you become an entrepreneur, or if you're born one. I studied at the Chaos Pilot in Denmark, so that's a three-year creative business school with a lot of entrepreneurial spirit in it.
What led you there? That seems like a deviation from the normal path.
Yeah, that's a...
It looks amazing.
The Chaos Pilot.
Yeah.
It's... The story began with an... I was doing a 3-day course when I was, in my teenage years, I think, a little bit after that. And we had this guy who was a chaos pilot who did the course, and it influenced me a lot on thinking what I would pursue and do stuff. And then many years later, I was working in the UK as a project manager. We were refurbishing a big super yacht, so my passion for sailing came in there. And at one point, I was fed up with that life. I just didn't know what to do. And all of a sudden, it struck me again. Maybe this chaos pilot education might be something for me. I started looking it up, and then I was back in Stockholm for New Year's Eve or for Christmas. And on the way back, on the flight on the way back, this guy that from the chaos pilot that I had this course with like 10 years earlier was on the same flight, and it sort of struck me, maybe this is a sign. So I started to talk to him on the flight back, and one gave the other, and I applied, and then I got in, and here I am.
Is chaos pilot like what it sounds like, piloting through chaos?
Exactly. It's like you learn how to navigate an entrepreneurial or a business chaos.
How's the course structured?
So it's a three-year education where there is no teacher at the school. So each group of students, around 35 students, get a team coach that facilitate the whole journey. The first day on the school, you get a bunch of business cards and the key to the school, and they tell you, okay, so this is your chances, your 3 years, and you do what you want with it, right? And then everything you do is applied on a real cases from real customers that you're gonna solve. And then you do it individually, in groups, or as a whole team.
And you're now doing work in the social entrepreneur space. Is that a focus of that, or?
It is, have been more and more. You know, I think when I studied, this was, I graduated in 2005. At that point, social entrepreneurship was very, very, you know, in its early stage, really. And now it has been even more of that in the latest years. But the whole idea was, from the very early start of the Chaos Path, was to change society by entrepreneurship, right? And social entrepreneurship, you know, has, you know, really come into play the last 5 to 8 years, I would say.
What sort of businesses did, or business problems did you work on?
In my studies, well, we did a research tour of how the European entrepreneur looked like, for example, the whole class. We went out for 3 months in campervans throughout Europe to study how does the European entrepreneur look like, and there was a business case from the Danish Society of Businesses, right? So they had this assignment to us, and we came up with 7 different profiles of how the European entrepreneur looked like.
Well,
that's, you know, one case, and then we had other cases where we worked with the Danish film industry to come up with new concepts for children's programs. I did work for the Danish Motorway Association, you know, to promote new motorways. Like, also
they sound like quite significant, audacious sort of projects. These are not just sort of little things.
No, I mean, some are bigger than others, right? Yeah.
And you worked in, you say you worked in yourself and with teams.
Exactly.
And
so the whole idea of the Chaos Pilot is to develop yourself. It was more of an internal journey, and then you learn how to use tools and to learn how to use tools rather than to get a specific skill. So after the education, you can apply this knowledge to any field, really. So you'll find Chaos Pilots in any work of life throughout the world, really, working on all sorts of different projects.
So now you describe yourself, or at least I described you, as the founder of Impact Hub Stockholm. That probably wasn't where you thought you were going to go. What did you think you were going to do when you finished that? As you finished it, what was your
plan? Yeah, when I finished the Chaos Pilot, I went back to Stockholm and I started my own company as a management consultant. So I worked then with change processes. So we facilitated and designed change processes, medium to big corporations, really. And I did it first on my own, and then I joined a consortium of freelancers, so to speak, and we worked under the same brand, Fluid Minds Business Revolutionaries. So we also wanted to change how people did business. And together with these, we founded one of the first co-working spaces in Stockholm. So about a year after I came back, we thought that we needed to sit in a place and an environment where we could find like-minded people to work on bigger projects, on things that hadn't occurred to us before, meet with unlikely allies, etc. So then, and this was in the very early stage, co-working hasn't really been on the table at that point. We opened this space where we tried to get people in who want to collaborate on all sorts of different business issues. And we talked a lot about business innovation at that point. We did a lot of innovation work in different sort of organizations.
At the time, what was driving you? I imagine having studied, there was some imperative to put some food on the table.
Mm.
Is that the, you know, is that the primary thing that was driving you at the time?
I mean, at that, I think I was very young and, I don't know, naive, maybe not. But I found it really, you know, fulfilling to work with organization, to be inside an organization and then help them to change. I think that was sort of the driving, the motivation was just very, very fulfilling to see when people sort of started to see that they had the potential to do something differently. Right, and I think that's very, very motivating when you do work.
Because I don't interpret this as you're not successful now, but you could have taken a path that was just about the money.
Yeah, of course.
So was there a pivot point? Was there a tipping point or something? Yeah, at what point did you think this is where I'm going?
Well, I think that started earlier than that started probably before the Chaos Pilots, or actually when I decided that I want to go with the Chaos Pilot, because the Chaos Pilot for me was a 3-year very much internal journey where I realized that I wanted to, you know, do something differently, or, you know, I wanted to be part of the change that we needed to see. Part of the last year, the Chaos Pilot, I did a lot of work in South Africa, and I was very influenced by the African continent and the South African people and their mindsets. So my first company, I named it Ubuntu, which is the African concept of being together, right? It means Ubuntu Nagabantu, which is like you're only a person through other people, to other persons. You're born to the world as a potential human being, but it's not until you come in contact with other people that you start to exist. So, which means that your relationship is very, very important, right? You care for every relationship in your life. And I think when I came after that realization, I came back to Sweden, I realized how much we lack that in the Western world and how much we can learn from, you know, African or many other countries as well. And I think, you know, at that point, I realized that I wanted to, you know, take that knowledge and help other people to understand that. So that was probably just after I came back, or for that African, you know, context, that I realized this is...
So the change we need to see, what's the change we need to see?
I think it's an internal behavioral change in the society. I think we have all the tools and knowledge to do whatever we want to. You know, we can fly to Mars if we want to, right? But it's hard to meet your neighbor sometimes. It's hard to say hello to the cashier at the local grocery store. And I wonder, and then I think at other parts of the world, this is not so hard, you know. Because there's a cultural behavior that's in there in the system, and I think this is what we need to see that change, and I think that's the hardest change of all. I mean, we can install new, you know, gear and self-driving cars to be able not to drive cars anymore, right? I think we will be able to do that very soon, and we're probably going to do that. But how do we change behavior in society to actually care for each other, so that we don't sit with our cell phones and press thumbs up on Facebook and think that I've done my part, when you actually have to step outside the door and go to your neighbor and say, you know, do you need help?
So the big question then is, what's the role of business in achieving that change of behavior to actually care for each other? That doesn't sound, it sounds like a value proposition, as in the values we hold. There's perhaps some tension there with values with a dollar sign in it.
Well, I don't think it should be. I think the problem is that businesses and the way we have been doing business for many, many years is, as you say, to generate money, to generate revenue for the stockholders or for the business owners, and that has been the driving factor for it. But I also think that this is one of the behavioral change we need to see, that everything is interconnected, you know, businesses, but also politics and, you know, the society, people who are living in villages, communities, etc. They are all interlinked. So it's not to say that just business has to change. And they are part of that system.
So you set up your collaborative workspace, and over the next sort of 4 or 5 years, that morphed itself into Impact Hub.
Exactly. So the first workspace was called R17 because it was a street name called Ritagatan, so number 17 was a project name, it just stuck. And we called it the Innovation at the Intersection. We invited speakers and we had lunch seminars and we had a lot of different people coming in and out of the space. And then after about 2.5 years, I was actually on maternity leave with my second child. I took the family to the US and we bought a sailing boat that we renovated and then sailed down to Cuba and Mexico for about 9 months. And during that part, the people who was running R17, they decided to, we should, you know, join this other network of hubs around the world. And I also already been speaking to certain parts of the hub network at that point as well. Even when I was in Mexico, I met up with them. So we choose to, you know, rebrand R17 into the hubs.com and kept most of our members. And then, but we felt like this is the right path to go. We need to do something more, something we see that together we can create even more values.
So you have to give us the introduction to the Impact Hub.
Yeah, so Impact Hub is a global network of spaces and makers. Makers are people who are engaged in running an Impact Hub. And the value proposition of an Impact Hub is, as I said, spaces. We have over 100 spaces around the world. Content in the space, we provide programs, seminars, all sorts of different social activities. And then community, you know, we cannot work without the community. How do we create the space and content to drive a prosperous community who can, you know, be the change that we need to see in society? So those three elements is together what we call the Impact Hub experience, and that's our business proposal, our business value proposition.
You said you had some existing community members. Did any of them not fit that model?
No, I don't think so. The thing is with the business with Impact Hub is that our vision is people take a collaborative action for a better world. That's our common vision. And when we say people, we mean everybody, because we believe that everybody will have an impact on society. And we know that as a fact. Everybody has an impact, regardless of what you do. You can have a positive impact, you can have a negative impact, you will have an impact. And then it's more about how do you choose to have an impact? And you can change your behaviors and your impact. And we have also seen that when new members come to us who are not so aware of what kind of impact they are having, but being exposed to our community, our values, and what we how we do business, they sort of change also attitudes and behaviors in their businesses, and then by therefore having a different impact on society.
Everybody thinks they're having a positive impact. The alt-right in America thinks it's having a positive impact. Is it sort of blatant that you don't mean that sort of positive impact?
Sir, what do you mean, blatant?
Do you make it, you know, how, if you had somebody turn up that was doing something that was blatantly or very clearly intolerant, do you usher them to the door? Do you take them in? Because then if they're inside the tent, you can change their ways?
I think so. I think we like to take everybody in, right? Obviously, for us, it's important to foster a community where we share some common values, which is our three core values of the Impact Hub Global Network, which is trust. You know, we want to create a community where we build trust among our members, and we do this in all sorts of various ways. Collaboration is key to any kind of greater impact. And if you build trust, collaboration will come on the way. And if you have collaboration, it is built on trust. And the third value then is courage. We need to see people who can do things differently, go paths that hasn't been gone before. So when we have someone coming in and doesn't fit our, normal, picture of who could be an Impact Hub member, we want to take them in as well. Because I also think that we need to see the unlikely allies as a potential for a collaboration. Because you don't know when you meet someone who they are really and what they're going to do and how that collaboration is going to look like. It doesn't mean that it will happen. But as soon as you start saying, no, this community is only for a certain amount, certain people, then you exclude a lot of, other people, I think, as well. So, and we all have the right to think differently, right?
Everybody has good ideas. It's not that hard to have the intention to make things better. Is there a secret formula for how you get from intention to impact?
Yeah, no secret formula as such, I think, but I think a lot of hard work, right? A bit of luck. And then a few other things, which is like, be open-minded, right? Be transparent, be what you want. I can see that when I look back, as soon as I start expressing, this is what I would like to do, right? To everybody, and that's why also to the unlikely allies. Then all of a sudden, doors are opened and new initiatives occur, etc. And then stay sort of still focused on, this is my core mission, this is what I want to do. I think that's sort of some of the basic, or sort of, if you have that, you can go anywhere. And then there is also sort of other different business skills that is good to have, maybe, but some of them you can acquire later. You can hire someone who's better at it. You can, expand your team to get those competences that you need. So I think that, and then also, getting the right people on board early.
So what we haven't really covered is why social enterprise. Social enterprise gets misused as a euphemism for not successful.
Mm.
But it's not that. What does it mean for you?
Yeah, I think it's different. In my head, there is a big difference between a social entrepreneur and an entrepreneur as we've seen it so far. And the difference is not in terms of that one wants to make more money than the other, that one wants to have different business skill set than the other, or need different business skills. Because a social business is still a business. A business where you sell service or products, and you have customers and you have suppliers, etc., etc. But it is the starting point, the intention of why you're doing business that is different. Because there is a lot of great startups that want to make a lot of money, and they see a social issue as a potential business opportunity. And for me, that is super naive, because as soon as you start exploiting a societal need to make money on it, it's like, it's so wrong in my head, right? But and this is the difference then. If you're a social entrepreneur, the goal is not to make money on it, it's to solve the issue, right? And to solve the issue, you need to have a you know, a business model that is sustainable. And that business model could look differently. It could be based on grants or fundings from external sources. It could also be based on that the societal challenge pay for the service, or it's the municipality that pays for the service, because there's also different business model to it. But the way you go about it is that we want to solve this issue. And hopefully you then also build a new business model around it that is sustainable. But I think the problem we see, or the challenge that we see for a social entrepreneur, is that they, most of the time, you're trying to apply the old thinking or the old way of doing a business to a societal challenge. And that's why in Sweden, in my context anyway, there is no legal form, for example, for a social business. So lots of social entrepreneurs, they create different entities. They can have a for-profit and a not-for-profit and a cooperatives, or, you know, to be able to juggle the differences, the complex business model you might have to set up to address this societal issue. Whereas if you are a normal entrepreneur, a normal business, you go for a for-profit as a business. It's as simple as that.
And the runaway success, perhaps, for a social enterprise is that you've solved the problem and you're not needed anymore.
Exactly. Yeah.
Which is the opposite of of a non-social business.
Yeah.
Do you talk to people about having an exit strategy? You know, is that the goal?
It's not actually. That is. It's not as a common talk actually to talk about that. In terms of social entrepreneurs, because they go most of the time wholehearted into solving this issue, and for them an exit strategy is not about, in terms of business, an exit strategy is, I'm going to make a lot of money, I'm going to sell my company, and if the company's going to keep on rolling. But an exit strategy for a social entrepreneur would be, well, I solved the issue, my company is not needed anymore, we had to do something else. So that exit strategy will look very differently.
Does the model scale? I'm imagining that if I'm trying to solve a problem in my community, that's quite a different business that I'm going to want to run than if I'm trying to help communities across the country or the region or wherever solve the same problem. Those are quite different looking things. If I'm trying to do something that essentially I can do the work, that's a very different business model than if I'm helping other people do the work. How do people scale up and so that they're actually having the impact beyond my own reach?
Yeah, there's different ways of scaling. We ran a European research project around this a couple of years ago, actually ended last year, where we looked at social enterprises around Europe to see what it would take for them to scale, right? And I think we identified four different ways of scaling. I can't see if I can remember them now, but one was social franchising, for example, right? So it's more or less it's a franchise model, but for social businesses. One was opening it up, sort of that anyone can use your product or service for free, like an open source method. And another one was to establish yourself in a new country, you know, own the brand yourself. And then the third and fourth one was to do it in collaboration with others. So you still using your own brand, but let out someone else run it. Maybe like a franchise, but owned by yourself. So I think this is different ways of scaling, and some of them are business as usual, and some could be differently as well. And some of the problem or the challenge you can see is that a social issue or social challenge in one context could be similar in another context, but also very different. So it's not as easy maybe to, you know, smartphone shells, and I want to sell this in other countries, and there's a distribution challenge for it, and it's very easy. But if you're trying to solve a societal challenge, the social context and the local context is different in other communities. So you have to learn first and take the best practices and then go to the other place, and then you have to sort of learn, how does this context look like, and is this applicable to this, or do we have to change this?
How do the impact hubs, there's lots of impact hubs, 100 or something.
Yeah.
What sort of network have you got? How's this? What's the sharing look like?
So the impact hub is an association, which owns the global brand Impact Hub, and each local hub pay a license fee to be part of this global network. And if you're part of the global network, you have one vote in our association. So we co-own the whole association together, and then we have a non-profit company that run the global sort of business for us. And we meet at least once a year. Every representative of the association meets once a year to look at, you know, how do we strategize? What is our goal the next year or the next 3 years? And then we also meet to share best practices. How does this work in one context? How can we learn from each other? How do we do things? So it's all about innovation at the edges of this network, and try to build a lean structure where, you know, we can work fast and we can try things, and then we can take it from the bottom-up approach. So if it works in one context, how can we see if that works in other contexts as well? So we have a platform where we can share resources and ideas, etc., among the makers of the Impact Hubs.
And if I was to be starting one up, I'm presuming I'd get some support for that.
Yeah, absolutely, right? So there is a whole process of starting an Impact Hub, and then as we evolved as well, you have been in existence for 10 years as well, so we're a young organization, but we really have seen a rapid growth over the past 4 or 5 years. We also have redefined this process of becoming an Impact Hub, so we are also internally better, have a better capacity to take care of the onboarding process for new hubs.
You talked before about applying old ways of doing business to social problems and don't work in some cases. What particular elements of old ways of doing business don't work?
Can I say all? No. I think the biggest thing that doesn't work and should not be applied to social business is the concept of competition. I think it's, again, super naive to say, well, we're going to solve this challenge and we're going to compete with other people to solve it. Because, again, then you are exploiting someone's need and competing with others to tackle this challenge. And I think that this is fundamentally built into the old business model, right? Competition, right? You're going to be best at doing this. And at the Chaos Pilot, we have this saying that we're not the best school in the world. We're going to be the best school for the world, right? And there's a huge difference in that little change of sentence. And I always seen Sweden is a great country. We have a fantastic welfare system. And I try to see, how can Sweden be an incubator for ideas for the world? You know, how can we be not the best country in the world, but the best country for the world? It's a huge difference. It's a very different approach to this thing. So to solve, if you want to change something in the old business model, is take that competition out of the game. But if you do that, it's super hard to sort of speak to customers and suppliers and, you know, there is no competition. If you can't compete, how do you go to someone else with a, you know, similar idea that yourself have? Or how is that relationship going to look like if you can't compete with them, if you only have to collaborate with them? It's very different.
But wouldn't you like to have the best impact hub in the world?
What is that? I don't know. I mean, I think competition is... The thing is, I think we need to also make ourselves accountable to what we do. And I think that is good, right? We need to have a certain standard of things. And in our network, we are accountable towards each other. You know, our global network is only as strong as its weakest link, right? So I think it's not about being the best, but it's making sure that our global network is as strong as possible. So it's looking at who's the weakest and how can we strengthen them, rather than for me to be the absolute best impact hub, that would be, you know, shooting myself in the foot, because it doesn't matter how good I am if someone else has ruined everything by, you know, being bad, you know. So it's more important to make sure that we lift all these people, you know, or, I mean, now I'm talking metaphorical, but it you know, applies to the rest of the world as well. How can we lift everybody that is, you know, doesn't have the opportunity to be great? So we lift everybody, and then we lift everybody as well.
Your office, it's still a collaborative workspace. That's sort of
very much
call it. It's in central,
yeah,
Stockholm.
Yeah, we just moved about 6 months ago from eastern part to a super central location. You know, smaller space, but very much more accessible. So we're now trying to figure out, so how are we gonna play this new space, and what kind of role are we gonna play in the collaborative workspace environment that also during the past 2-3 years literally exploded in Stockholm. You know, when we started 10 years ago, there were no other co-working spaces. Now everybody is applying the same model as we sort of invented almost 10 years ago, with membership and then flexible hours, etc.
So what's your value proposition?
I mean, yeah, I think as I said, I mean, space for us is just 1/3 of our value proposition. But when everybody, I mean, it's easy to open a space and call it a cool name and create a community as well around it. But we also have a purpose of doing it. I mean, if I didn't have that purpose of actually, you know, helping entrepreneurs to create change, I think I wouldn't see it very interesting to run a creative workspace, right? It would be very boring, actually. You know, just for the sake of having a bunch of cool friends around to hang around with and do cool stuff. Yeah, for a while maybe, but I think I would be bored afterwards, and then it wouldn't even fulfill me either.
We talked about the social need and the relationship between that as an exit strategy, but the way you've just described it, creating entrepreneurs to create change, that's not going to go away. That's a need that's going to always be there. There's always going to be people wanting to create change and wanting to do it through an entrepreneurial route.
Mm.
Is that the Holy Grail? Have you hit the sweet spot of where it goes in terms of that business? I think perhaps you have. What sort of businesses do you have?
Also, I mean, we're really trying to find a diversity of people in our community. You know, people from early stage startups, you know, students with just ideas, to people who worked in the same business for 10, 20 years, you know, had lots of experience. And small startups, we have cooperatives, we have you know, other support organizations as our members as well. So trying to get that mix of people, that diversity is key to create a community that can learn from each other as well. And be not just learn, but also be maybe challenged by each other as well. That's why I think we don't say no to anyone as well, because if someone comes in with a totally different view of how to do things, it's good to be challenged in that way, right?
Do you act? In what ways do you actively support the community aspects? Do you, I don't know, have football teams or?
Yeah, also I think it starts to when we get new members who want to become a member, right? So it starts with making sure that they feel that this is just as much their place as ours, right? This is their home away from home. This is this is a space that we share, right? Our members are just as much as responsible for the well-being of the space, the vibe, the culture, the energy in the space as we are. I mean, we have a sort of a back-end responsibility to make sure that, you know, the infrastructure works. And then making sure that this is about contributing, right? It's not about coming in there and see what can I get out of this, you know, community. It's about what can I contribute with, right? It's being, you know, it's that sense of belonging. And if you do that, if you always contribute, and you get a lot of things back.
Do you have a go-to definition of sustainability?
A go-to definition?
Yeah, yeah. Someone says, what's the sustainability thing?
I think I don't really like the word sustainable as well, because, you know, what is sustainable? It's like something just does nothing happen. It's just sustained. You know, there's no progress. It's like sustainable. And I think it's misused that way. I think the approach that we're seeing now in recent years around the circular economy, around that everything has to be everything, I mean, because everybody has an impact regardless of what you do. Every product or service you sell have an impact everywhere from when you're manufacturing it to when you sort of buy it, and any people in between, and then it's all part of a whole. It's very complex, you know, and then people, I understand that people just shy away from it sometimes, but I think that is much more interesting to look at than sustainability.
How do you get people to be thinking about the impacts and the opportunities and things in that sort of space? Do you use frameworks, Natural Step, or something to help people structure that thinking?
I think we do it in small steps, small nudges with everything we do. You know, we try to choose our suppliers very carefully. You know, so all our suppliers have some kind of a social impact. You know, when we have our catering people, we use a catering company called Waste Kitchen, that all of their food comes from, you know, grocery stores that would throw it away otherwise. Our cleaning company that sort of employs young immigrants who couldn't be afforded, and they actually not just give them jobs, but they educate them to go further. So all of those kind of small things, we installed, you know, small plugs on our taps in our kitchen that actually produces a steam rather than a thread of water, which reduced the amount of water you use by 98%. So those kind of small things in everything we do gets people sort of thinking, you know, I think unconsciousness about behavior, because it's what I said earlier, it's just changing the behaviors of people that we need to see.
Sweden, Stockholm, took in a lot of refugees over the last few years. Have any found their ways to your door?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we have one of our members now. I love him. He's fantastic, but he's a refugee from Syria. Came to Sweden a year or so ago, I think, and we are sort of supporting him now in our... we have what we call the Power by Impact Hub program, where we see potential in people, and he had written a book about a girl, her trip from Syria to Sweden and everything that she'd been part of, and the book is written in a format, so it's actually targeting traumatic children, so it's a book that you can use transformative, so to work on children that has a traumatic background. And together with him, we also trying to engage the Swedish church and the city of Stockholm to do projects around this. So how can we take care of especially the lonely refugee children that's coming to Sweden?
What is the biggest success you've had in the last couple of years?
Business-wise? Maybe. I mean, this move that we did now, I think, is amazing. It's giving us new opportunities, especially because we have a real estate partner that, you know, they came to us actually and asked us, can you operate an impact hub from our space? Because they are very much into the circular economy, but they don't really know how to do it. And they are really good already, right? But they want to do more. So they see us as their R&D department, really. So that's a huge step for us, a change in direction as well, a little bit. I mean, there has been so many things that we've been doing. I think the scaling program that we did with the 8 different hubs in Europe has also been enormously successful and also try for us to really collaborate across borders with other impact hubs. So I think that is a good success as well.
So we're writing a book about these conversations. We're calling it Tomorrow's Heroes. So, what is your superpower? Not what do you wish for, but how would you describe the superpower that you're bringing to the team working towards this positive future?
I think I don't give up. You know, I've been through this I've done this for many years now. I've been on this roller coaster and it's just been going really steep downhill as part of the way, right? But somehow we always seem to be getting up again, and I always feel like I can motivate my team to feel that this is what they is doing is valuable, right? And I think if I look back and through the, we also take a lot of volunteers in as well, they all come back and have this feeling of, like, this was such a great experience to be here. You know, the last person who stopped working for me was a German guy. He moved back to Berlin, and he was crying when he, you know, had to leave. He's like, I don't want to go here, but, you know, his girlfriend moved back, and, you know, I think that gives me a lot of pleasure to see that people have been so motivated in just being part of our, you know, team of our community and being able to contribute with whatever skills they have. So what we're trying to build, and I'm trying to build over the years, is that it's the platform, right? The platform, I like to see the company of Impact Hub Stockholm as a platform for not just the community, our members, but also a platform for my team and my volunteers to evolve and to, you know, be passionate about whatever skills they want to that they have, and be able to see that they actually are contributing with something.
So you have a platform. Do you consider yourself to be an activist?
Maybe. I don't know. What's the definition of an activist?
Well, I'm hoping you're going to define it for me.
Yeah. I don't know. Activist in my head is an old term. You know, my parents, they were activists in the 70s, right? I grew up with a family of activists. We went on demonstration together when I was very young. When I was at daycare, I was an activist. You know, I was standing up and getting my whole class of 6-7-year-old daycare team to move against certain things, right? So in some ways, yes, I have that in my blood, and I'm trying to do it now by, you know, creating a framework, a platform for other people to take action, right? I think that's my contribution to this, because if I do this right, I can see I have more impact than if I would pursue one specific thing. You know, I could probably just say, well, let me do whatever business, you know, take one single challenge and say, I want to work with, you know, refugee children, for example. This is going to be my thing. And I probably could set up a really good business around that and have an impact that. But I think I do more good if I create this platform, Impact Hub Stockholm, and let Iman, who is this Syrian refugee, do his job very good, because he's probably better at it. He has more understanding of it. And then my support to him, I can then support many other people as well. You know, so in that sense, I hope my impact would be bigger.
What is the biggest challenge you're looking forward to in the next year or so?
The biggest challenge, I think, is we just launched the what we call the SDG hack in Stockholm, the Sustainable Development Goal hack. And we you know, going back to this platform thinking, right, we want to see, we're thinking around, so how, what is our role now as a creative workspace in Stockholm when we moved, and we're really taking on these sort of the sustainable development goals and saying we need to find a platform for people who are engaged in this and wants to find solutions to this. So we just launched SDG Hack, which is a weekly, you know, meetup with for everyone who wants to, you know, work on these sustainable development goals. And we have a sort of a format for it where we, you know, connect people on a deeper level. We inspire them with stories and the people who has knowledge around these issues. And we work with it. We enable them to actually sit together and come up with solutions and start creating that change that we need to see. So that is the probably the biggest challenge, because I don't know how that is going to look like. And we're now testing during the summer, and we want to launch it, you know, in the autumn. And this is a 13-year plan, right? So we said that the SDG and is the Agenda 2030. So we have 13 years to actually achieve these goals. So that's why we're setting it. This is not an event. This is not a program. This is a platform that we set aside 13 years to achieve. And again, that's the next strategy will be then 2030 when we, you know, find solution to all these challenges. But how do we do this? I don't know. If it's just 3 hours a week, that's how we set aside now, or should we open the whole Impact Hub all 24 hours a day, 7 days a week to only this? How would we then structure our business model around that? That is the bigger challenge.
What motivates you? What gets you out of bed in the morning?
My children. Probably my 5-year-old, he comes to my bed every morning, you know, and wakes me up, you know. But no, I think that's, I think during the past years when I got more children, it's that's, you know, it's fantastic, you know, to be with them and to hear their, you know, struggles and ideas and creativity, you know, it's super, super motivating.
Do you think that they might be social entrepreneurs?
Oh yeah, no, definitely. I mean, in their way, they will be. You know, they are very different, all three of them. But obviously, they've already been to the Impact Hub many times, and they like to be there. And I mean, my oldest son, he was very emotionally touched by the movie Home from 2009 about our planet, and he's now really telling me, you know, Dad, you can't take the car to go grocery shopping. You have to take your bike. You know, we should have a meat-free week. You know, all sorts of things, right? So he's already an activist or a social entrepreneur in such a way. So that's, I think, also motivates me into raising them to be, you know, aware of how to do things.
If you could wave a magic wand and have a miracle occur by tomorrow morning, what would you have happen?
I would then put women in power. I know, not just, you know, equal power share, but actually, you know, just as much power as the male has now, or just flip it. That would be my magic wand. And I think that is the, I think that would be a solution. I don't know, but you know, you can hope that would be a solution to most of the problem that we have, actually. You know, saying, you know, environmental, health, whatever it could be, I think women would have a chance, a better chance maybe, to solve these issues.
What's the smallest thing that we could do to make that happen? What would have the biggest impact for the least effort?
Stepping down as you know, male leaders, you know, letting women, you know, be in charge, just saying, hey, you know, I haven't actually done it consciously, but for some reason there's mostly women in my team. I don't know if it's just good, and I really trying to empower them. You know, I don't want to take the decision of things, and my goal would be to set someone up. Right now I'm the only owner of the business, but this is definitely not my goal, and if I want to, if I, you know, get someone in, it would be, you know, and I have one daughter, so she's my sort of pearl there that I'm not sure. I mean, I'm sure my boys will. They will make. They would be fine, you know. But it's her that I will, you know, make sure she become.
Do you have diversity in your the companies that you work with?
Sort of my members, you mean, or yeah, I think we have around a 50% female and male in our member base.
Cool. Lastly, then, do you have any advice for our listeners?
Be yourself, you know, be whoever you are meant to be, you know, embrace everything that is you, and you know, be transparent about it, and don't be ashamed of if you feel differently, you know, if you think differently than others, you know, be proud of it.
That sounds like good advice to me. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to Sustainable Lens Resilience on Radio, a weekly show on sustainability topics brought to you by Otago Polytechnic. The show is co-hosted by Shane Gallagher and me, Samuel Mann. We're broadcast on Otago Access Radio, that's oar.org.nz, and podcast on sustainablelens.org. On sustainablelens.org, we are building up a searchable archive of conversations with people from many different fields who are applying their skills to a sustainable future. In our conversations, we're trying to find out what motivates them and what it means to see the world through a sustainable perspective, through their sustainable lens. Tonight's sustainable lens was that of Jesper Schellerus from Sweden. And we didn't talk about sailing.
Next time. I'll be back.
It's going to be another challenge for the America's Cup.
Yep.
Have you sailed on one of those flying catamarans yet?
Not yet.
That'd be awesome. Where did I get to? Oh, just there. You can follow the links on sustainablelens.org to find us on Facebook to keep in touch, and you can listen to Sustainable Lens via iTunes as well as all the other poddy sorts of places. That was Sustainable Lens. I'm Samuel Mann. I hope you enjoyed the show.
At Otago Polytechnic, we've made a commitment to sustainability in all that we do. High quality, hands-on education is our trademark, and it's delivered with a focus on sustainable practice. We even have a school dedicated to it, our Centre for Sustainable Practice. For more information, check out our website, otagopolytechnic.ac.nz. A bright future is a sustainable future. Otago Polytechnic, proud sponsor of Sustainable Lens.
This program was first broadcast on Otago Access Radio and made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.